This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fay. How are you?
Well, as usual, it's a beautiful day. And
well, yes. Any Saturday that we wake up and we're walking around and we're having a day off, we can run and run around and see people and kind of, you know, spend time with our families. It's always a good Saturday.
It is. And, you know, the llamas are being sheared today.
Oh, wow.
They're getting those old heavy coats off today.
Wow, neat.
So that's a neat thing at my house.
Yeah,
and you know, everybody wants to watch the grandchildren. It's a family project.
Sure. Do you take the fur and make like pillows and things out of it?
No. Hopefully this year we're going to ship all that fur somewhere.
Oh yeah.
And you know, let them make. They like to make rugs and sweaters out of all that hair.
Really? Oh wow.
Yes. Wow, and it's expensive when you get one of those sweaters, and. It's a llama. My gosh, they cost a lot of money.
Where does one go to find a llama sweater?
Well, at all your major department stores, they would probably have some.
Oh, wow.
I know several people I've seen in New York on television have them on their floors as rugs.
Ooh, fancy.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I bet they're nice and soft. I bet they have a really nice texture.
They do, and they're very heavy. You know, llama's fur, I know when we cut it, and they're shearing, it looks like it's 8 to 10 inches deep.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's really deep. So they're just thankful to get those big coats off.
I bet they are. Wow. How many times a year do you do that?
Once a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they go all winter with that and fall. They go fall to winter to, you know, usually we get it done, you know, first of June, and this year we're late. Because they were tied up. But anyway, it is a miracle to get that off and make them happy.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, then that'll be a great thing.
It will be a great thing for everybody concerned. Everybody concerned will be happy.
Yeah. Awesome. Wonderful.
Yes. So let's give out the phone number.
Let's do that.
Okay. It's 877-588-3330, and we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage, my favorite store.
Yes, it is. So this is all about planning your retirement so that you can retire happy and wealthy and early. And the plan is, you know, when we talk about these types of investments, we talk about, you know, like life settlements especially. We talk about, you know, various other things that you can do to plan and save and grow your money so that you can retire. But this is not just a one-time thing. This is not just, hey, invest in this and then, you know, take your money out in a certain period of time and you can go ahead and retire. It still requires planning. It still requires something that happens over several years. I mean, this is it's not, you know, you're going to get rich overnight.
It's not quick. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
You cannot do this overnight and come out ahead.
Right.
You have to have a lot of policies. You have to plan it, especially if it's IRAs. You know, you've got to work it every year until retirement, and sometimes way past retirement. If you started late in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you started late and you were, you know, 60 years old when you started this, you know, you've got to keep going and going to keep that interest up where it'll be enough to live on.
Yeah. And that's a good point that you bring up, too, is that, you know, after retirement happens, I don't know that a lot of people actually think about how am I going to have some money coming in. I've still got to grow my money, because if you have a set amount when you retire, and then you hit that date and you retire and you're no longer getting a paycheck, you don't want to just start hemorrhaging money and deleting, you know, funds out of your account. That's not going to do you any good. Eventually, at some point, that account is going to run dry, and then a lot of people are in trouble, especially if they end up living longer than they think, and maybe they didn't plan for enough savings. And so you want to keep always, you want to keep your money growing, because you still want money coming in so that you can keep going on for, you know, however long it may be.
And you want to live the same. You don't want to get halfway through retirement and say, oh my gosh, we've got to sell the big house, we've got to go to a small house, we've got to just change everything. You don't want to change your life. When you retire, you want it to be steady the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You want to be to know you've got enough income every year. You know, you can do a lot of fun things, have fun, and still live.
Yeah.
And if a person doesn't plan it, it might not end up that way.
I was talking to a couple people, I forget if it was this week or last week, but they were saying things like, gosh, if we can cut out this, or we can, you know, not maybe travel as much as we wanted to. I heard them saying these things that throw up all kinds of red flags, and these are warning signs that if these are words and things that somebody is saying as they're planning retirement, we can cut back on this or whatever the case may be. That's a red flag that you're not ready.
That's exactly right. You have not saved enough. You've not you haven't invested, you know, wisely, or you would have enough. And you know, the bad thing is, when they first retire, you know, you're still young, you're 65, 67, or a lot of mine are 59. Well, you can still do a lot of things. You can make changes to your situation. You know, we can not take as much the first 5 years, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then as the income gets higher, you can take more. But I have seen widow ladies that, you know, didn't prepare exactly right. And so then, you know, they are not going to have as much. You know, like maybe they're going to have $4,000 a month. That's it, no more. And so if you have an emergency, they really don't have that extra. So, you know, all of our people, you know, whether they're doing annuities, which a lot of widow ladies do, you know, we want them to have maximum income the rest of their life. And that works real good. Now, when we're talking about couples, you know, they're going to have a lot more money than a widow did when she started. So if they've got, you know, $300,000 when we start, or $500,000 or $1 million, whatever it is, we're going to grow it over time. We were looking at one of our clients' portfolios this week. He's had 20 maturities.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's over about 4 years, but that is a great, great return, 20. Now, he's got four that have gone over, but four out of 20 is not bad for him going over.
Those are pretty good odds.
It's good odds, because we knew some would go over. We knew some would come in on time, and then the rest of his all came in early.
Oh, wow.
So that's the way it should be. You have a few that come in late, but you want most of them to be on time. And then the ones that are early, it's just a bonus. It's a great bonus. And we've been having so many come in early, that's really a good thing. But you always have that risk. We talk about risk all the time. You always have the risk that some of them will come in late. So everybody's accredited. They're prepared for that. So it's not that big a strain on them. And especially if they're already retired, we've already got their income set up. We've already got them income coming all the time. So if they're late and it's an IRA, they were expecting it. Because a lot of your IRAs, they weren't expecting to take all that right away anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have more than one IRA with us. They might have his IRA and her IRA. So and then a lot of them, when they retired, you know, they got a lump sum. We took that in also. So start with them, we might have started out with an IRA. And then we took their 401k when they retired and converted that to an IRA. So, you know, we know up front what the income stream will be. We know how much principal they've got, and we don't want to ever get into their principal. We want to always be into the interest.
You know,
and if we work it right, it should work that way.
And you brought up a point a few minutes ago about emergencies, and we don't really talk about that a whole lot. I know that that's probably one of the, I guess, post-retirement surprises that people can encounter that they may not necessarily plan for when they're sitting at home trying to plan for their retirement. They may work out their bills and say, okay, well, the house is paid, the car is paid, everything's paid, which is what you need to be when you retire. You need to be in that kind of a state where you don't have large amounts of debt like that. So those hopefully are taken
care of. I would prefer to have no debt.
Well, yeah.
When they retire, everything should be paid for. Now, the only thing that we can talk about that might be an emergency is always the grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always have an emergency. So you have to plan for that also. You have to say, okay, I can lend them this much, but no more.
Okay.
Or I can help them with this, but I can't help them with that other item. Because you've got to think of you and your wife first. And a lot of people don't, but they should. And then most people... the grandkids are in good shape. They're on their own. They're out of college. They're married, and we're okay on that. But we do have a few that have emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
But most emergencies that we have to cover for our clients are small, thank goodness.
And then every once in a while, there's a possibility of some kind of a health emergency, whether it's, break a leg or, need surgery on something, or it could be something major, like they come down with some kind of a disease or cancer or, anything like that. There's all kinds of wide ranges of emergencies health-wise that people could encounter as well, that they need to at least plan for, keep in the back of their head, hey, this could happen, so you need to be prepared for these.
And I always tell them that you've got to set aside, when we start, $25,000 to $50,000 just for emergencies. Don't touch it, but leave it in cash in our account. And that way you've always got access, overnight, mm-hmm. if you ever needed it. And most of them, I always make sure they have group insurance. A lot of them, when they retire, they can take their insurance with them. If they can, I always say, stress, do it, because that gives you availability to group insurance, which is a lot better, than just single-payer insurance. Has higher amounts that it will pay, and that's always a blessing if you can take that with you. And then those, that, of course, that turn 65, they can use Medicare, which you're paying for that. A lot of people don't want to admit they have Medicare because you're paying for that. It's not a free service. Those premiums can run $500 or $600 a month.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that gives you insurance also. So if you need it, you've got both. A lot of times group insurance will only pay what Medicare doesn't pay after you get to a certain age. But for a long time, lots of times, it will pay before you ever get Medicare, so that protects your family also.
So ideally, you want to set people up so that they have multiple layers of protection if anything medical should happen, whether it's savings, $25,000 to $50,000cash on hand at all times, whether it's group insurance, Medicare, all these types of things. You want to make sure that they have multiple levels in case anything happens.
That's exactly right. We need to always make sure they're covered, and that we don't want them going in and saying, well, I didn't know I'd need that. You need more really protection after you retire than before.
Yeah.
Because you're on your own, So we want to make sure they have all the layers that they need to protect them and their family. And there's some things you can't prevent. If they have an accident, you can't prevent all those things. If they have a dreaded illness, we can't prevent that, but we can be prepared and, to help them in that way. Because remember, if you have a dread disease, it's so expensive we can't even hardly talk about it. It can run $100,000 a month. We used to think it was about $30,000 to $50,000, but I'm finding out that's not true. We're reading all the new articles on this, and it's not true. Now it's really high.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be prepared in life.
I would imagine there's probably also increased possibility for, say, a car accident. And, if somebody gets in an accident, especially as an elderly person, or at least a post-retired age type of person, you may end up having to stay in the hospital for a week, maybe two, sometimes in, more severe cases, maybe three. And those hospital stays can get very expensive as well.
Let me tell you something. Last week, I saw some people who had been in the hospital for 1 month.
Really?
Can you imagine what it costs for 1 month?
Golly, that could easily, if you're not prepared, just that alone could wipe somebody out, I would imagine.
It could. And that's why all these people, you know, when they get cancer, they're calling us wanting to sell their policy. Mm-hmm. They need it. It's not we'll just sell our policy. It's, I need the money, you know, for medical treatment. And they really do, or they wouldn't be selling their policy. They would leave it for, you know, their wife, the husband, or, you know, the grandchildren. But they need it themselves, and that's why they come to us. This week, we are bidding on about $5 million in policies.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And I don't know till tomorrow if we get them, but one is a $3 million 12-month policy. We don't have it bought yet, so everybody's going to call the office on Monday and demand to get in it. I know, but I won't know till Monday if we do get it.
Yeah.
But we're looking at that $3 million. We're looking at $1 million policy that's short-term, and I don't even remember how short the others are. But we're looking at about $5 million, and all of them are short-term.
Wow.
So it's pancreatic cancer. And as everybody knows, when we buy pancreatic cancer, those are short.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be quick.
It will be. And one guy has already went to hospice.
Oh, no.
And when you go to hospice, that's just to clean up and finish everything out.
Yeah. That's never a good sign.
No. And we would escrow like 16 months, but the actual policy is going to be a 12-month duration.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll see what happens. But both of them. Two of the biggest ones are pancreatic. And, you know, we've done a lot of pancreatic. You know, that big one, that $20 million one, you know, it was 18 months and it came in 9.
Wow. That's really early.
I've never forgot about that one. And we've also had one that went over.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they misjudge them sometimes. But usually on pancreatic cancer, if they cannot operate, then it's really short.
Yeah.
If they operate and resect it, it's usually 2 years.
Oh, wow.
You actually live another 2. Yeah.
I didn't realize it could go that long.
Yeah, it can. It doesn't usually, but it can.
Hmm.
And we learned that from Fasano. Fasano is the very best on pancreatic and stomach cancer. They know their business.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to rely on.
And so for those who are new, who are not familiar with how this the process works, like you said, you know, somebody is diagnosed with cancer, and stage 4 is the ones that you're actually looking at. There are other types. There are, you know, stage 3, stage 2, and obviously, you know, just an elderly person who is healthy. None of those are types of policies you're even looking at. You're not even bidding on, up for consideration. So you're bidding on policies for people who have stage 4 cancer. They need to sell them because that treatment is very, very expensive. And then once you're awarded with it, then it becomes an opportunity for people to invest in. The policy holder gets their money and they can go do their treatment and whatever they need to do. And so then at that point, now you've got this policy. And so what happens from there? How does this process work for someone who's new to the whole thing?
Well, you know, once we buy the policy, then we send out emails telling everybody we've got it. We'd like to have them in it. And sometimes we forget to say, remember also, they can change their mind. Some states have 60 dadgum days. Most of them are just 15 days.
Mm.
But we immediately send out emails and say, would you like to invest in this? And this is what we recommend. So we'll recommend an amount based on what they have with us as to what they can afford to invest in. So once we get that done, then it goes to escrow. With Nevada Trust, they put everybody's money in escrow, and then they pay the people. And as usual, everything is left up to the bank. Once we do this for our people, we instruct the bank on how to do it, but we never touch their money. Money never comes to us. Their money is never in one of our accounts, okay? So then the bank sends the money out. Then we issue the contracts. It takes about 15 days to get a contract from us because that thing is about 84 pages now. You know, our contracts used to be about 27 pages.
Really?
But as the laws have changed, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and longer.
So it's almost like signing a mortgage.
Oh, my gosh. I think a mortgage would be simpler than our contract. That's what I think. I mean, I believe that. But anyway, then we get the contracts ready. We call them, either have them come in, or we will email them the contract to sign. And once they're signed, then a copy goes to them. We keep a copy. Then a copy goes to the bank. Most people don't realize the bank has a copy of everything you do. They have a copy of the contract. They have a copy of all of your portfolio. And then they have a spreadsheet. Every time we do a policy, we send a spreadsheet to the bank and say, this is how much each person has invested, this is what their profit is, and this is how much they're going to get back. So we do that on every policy we do. And that way the bank knows how much to pay them. They know how much the premiums are, if it goes over. They know everything about that particular policy.
So when somebody's looking at these policies and they're thinking, my gosh, you know, I don't know if I want to get on this one. I imagine it seems like the first thing you say is, okay, if it's here, it's a good policy. Just do it. And after time, when people start doing this for a while, then they know and they're just, okay, put me in, whatever. But for the fairly new investor, this is not just, because I'm sure people get a little bit nervous. We're talking about a lot of money to invest in here. But they're not just taking your word. They can actually, if they want to, they can go see. In fact, you go over all the documents. They can see exactly, the condition of the policy holder. You can see what they've been through, the types of treatments, what the type of cancer is. They have a lot of information that they can review for themselves.
They can read both of the LEs if they want to. Yes, they can review all of it. They can read all of it. But lots of times they say, I just don't understand it. I don't want to read it. Tell me. Uh-huh. So then we will. We'll tell them, when the cancer started, what kind of treatment they've had, what the doctors say, and what the final answer is. Uh-huh. And then you have to read that bottom line, that last paragraph. It tells, if the cancer is progressing. I read one this week and it said, in 16 it looked like they were going to be all right. They did the surgery. It came back quickly. And that's the deal right there. It came back quickly after surgery. So it means they didn't even near get it. It's already back. And then it says it has progressed fast. So that tells you they're going downhill. Then you read that bottom line and it says, the client wants to die with dignity and at home.
Oh.
So he's asked hospice to come in. Now, that policy is the one that's 12 months that we're bidding on because, he's already gotten hospice into his home. He owned a software company.
Oh, wow.
And then he got cancer 2 years ago. And, of course, he's not going to make it. But he said he didn't want to die in a hospital, with all these machines on him and them trying to save him when he knows he can't be saved. And he said, I want to die with dignity and with my family.
So it goes
to
show.
That tells you right there, it's a good policy.
Yeah. And I didn't realize there was that type of information in there. I thought it was strictly.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Wow, there's much more in there than what I actually thought. How cool.
Oh, my gosh.
So it shows their mental state. And I've always heard that when it comes to cancer, your mental state has a lot to do with how your body reacts to treatments and things like that. And so it sounds like this person has gotten in that place where they accept what's going to happen and they know what's going to happen. It's inevitable. And so they're just really doing the fiscally smart thing and they're taking care of their affairs ahead of time.
Yes, and him being an executive, he knew how it was going to work. He knew what was going to happen. And he said, I've had all the radiation I can take, all the chemo. He said, I just don't want to fight anymore. And he said, but I want to be comfortable, and I want to die with dignity. And he figured in a hospital, he was not going to die with any sort of dignity.
Yeah.
So the doctor concurred. They said, we think hospice is the way to go. And he said, I concur. And that was it. And no, I read every one of these five times probably because I'm always afraid I'll miss something that they have said. And I got one the other day, and everybody was really pushing. Our providers thought it was such a great policy. And then I came down there, and it said, this policy has been in remission since 15.
Oh, wow.
I go, if it's in remission, how can you think that I'm going to buy it because we don't know when the cancer might come back. It has to be an active cancer that's going to be fairly short, okay? And, of course, that's why we do so many breast cancer deals, because the first time it may not kill them. Mm-hmm. But then when it says this is a reoccurring breast cancer and it's already moved to the lungs, it's already moved to the spine and your ribs, you know, I know that that person is not going to last very long.
Yeah. And obviously our main goal is for people to survive, but we know the reality of cancer, and we know how deadly it can be sometimes, especially with stage four. And so when it gets to that point, the policyholder oftentimes needs to dump that policy. They need to get that cash. They need to sell it. And so that's where you come in. So you're helping out the policyholder. You can't medically help them. You can't magically make their cancer go away, unfortunately. And oftentimes, you know, doctors can't either. And so the next best thing we can do is provide that outlet for them to get that cash sum by selling their policy. And so you're helping them out as best you can. And now you've got this opportunity for other people to come in and make an investment in the policy. And so then at that point, people come in, they invest in their share of each policy, and then they just wait for the policy to mature. I mean, that's a simple way to put it, but that's basically how it works.
Well, it is. And these people, the reason they're selling, not only for the treatment, because it is so expensive, but they've made up their mind, I want to settle with my family now. I'm going to take that cash and just go ahead and distribute. They don't want to wait and let the others make the distribution. Mm-hmm. And I don't always know about that. I don't always understand, you know, who it's going to. But I know they want it now because they know they've got maybe a year. And if they've just got a year, they need this done now. Because lots of times when we say a year, you know, they go ahead and they pass away in 9 or 8 months. So they want to get it done now, and they don't want to wait. And so that's why they'll sell, like this guy owns a software company. His policy is $3 million, and he wants to go ahead and do it now. And as I said, we'll know on Monday if we get the policy. I think we will, but, you know, you never know for sure. But it looks like the family is leaning toward doing it with us. But both of these are pancreatic cancer. We've never had two at one time. Mm-hmm. And the other one is $1 million. Where this is three, the other one's just $1 million. But we are used to dealing with it, and we know, you know, what works and what doesn't on pancreatic cancer.
Yeah. And so investing in these types of policies, like we said at the beginning, this is not the kind of deal where somebody would come in and invest in one policy and all of a sudden they're ready for retirement. The plan is to put somebody on a trajectory. So if somebody wants to retire in 10 years, you'll put them on whatever path they need, the number of policies, the types of policies, things like that. You're looking at the return, you're looking at the time, you're looking at the LEs, you're looking at all these different pieces of information, and you're weighing everything. And each person has their own unique trajectory, whether it's more aggressive or maybe they're, you know, planning a little further out, maybe 15, 20 years till retirement. And so you may put them on something a little less aggressive for something like that. Each individual investor is very, very different. So they've got their own plan. And so the idea is, in order to get ready for retirement, you start investing in these policies, and then one matures and then they invest into another one. And then really the ultimate goal is to be diversified over a number of years, and that's how the big picture works to get people ready for retirement. Is that a fairly accurate
assessment? That's right.
You've
always got to be diversified. Yeah. You can't come in and say, I'm going to put $300,000 in one policy and leave it. That's not proper at all. You've got to have maybe three policies. If you've got $300,000, you need at least three. And you're going to have some that are 27, 30 months. You're going to have maybe one that's 12 months, maybe one that's 18 months. Mm-hmm. But you need to be diversified as to the time, not just the number of policies, but when they're going to come due, when you think they will come due. And as you know, we're paying off now. There was $1 million policy that landed in everybody's account this week. You know, we've been having policies maturing and going into people's accounts where we can reinvest it for them.
Yeah. So I know when you get these policies in, you said you sent out emails and you say, okay, we've got this policy. Would you like to be in and get in your share? Where does the new investor fit in? Say somebody's never seen you before. They're not, because I know you have a roster of existing clients and existing investors. But for somebody who's never been through this before and comes to see you for the first time, where do they fit in these policies? How do they get in?
Okay. Well, of course, they have to they come in as they come in. Then their investment's done that way. Like if one person already has $1 million with us, another person come in has $300,000. They get in line. Everybody gets in line, and we just fill them as they come up. So they might both be in the same policy, you know, depending on how it works. So when somebody comes in, we're going to say, okay, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks to get your money moved. But if they come in, they have cash. You know, we can invest them quicker because it's all cash, and we don't have to wait for the rollover from their 401k.
Yeah. Okay.
But a lot of people right now, they have cash. So we've had several big accounts lately that they just walked in, wrote a check. You know, they have oil lease money, or they have sold their ranch or a farm or, you know, a business. So those people have cash. They don't have an IRA. They don't have a 401k. So, you know, we have two different kinds of people. We have the people that's strictly cash, and they can invest right now. Then we have the people that have IRAs, 401ks, and theirs always takes a little longer.
So there's a place for everybody. They may just have to wait until their turn rolls around.
Certainly. That's always the way.
Okay. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we start getting into trivia, and you bring all kinds of interesting things to the table, whether we're, you know, putting things on our bucket list, neat things about Texas, just general trivia. What's the topic today?
Father's Day.
Oh, fabulous.
You forgot about it.
I did.
Fathers,
it's tomorrow.
You know, they're always short-shifted. You and I both know that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody makes so much about mothers and Easter and every other holiday. But fathers always seem to get the short shift.
Yeah.
But I'm just thankful they finally recognized Father's Day.
Well, yeah.
You know, it was a struggle in our country to recognize Father's Day. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no.
It was a big struggle. And if you start out with history, of course, Europeans, you know, everything starts in Europe before we ever get anything or learn anything. And way, way back, the Catholic in Europe, they were hosting a Father's Day type deal in the Middle Ages.
Really?
Can you believe that? And it was done on March 19th. And it was on the feast day of St. Joseph. And they started out that way. And they still, in Europe, Father's Day is still celebrated on March 19th. And, of course, the Catholic Church, way back then, supported the custom of a celebration of fatherhood on St. Joseph's Day. And then, of course, you come back to America. Father's Day was not celebrated in the U.S. outside of Catholic traditions until the 20th century.
Really?
Amazing deal. Yeah, and then it was very, very hard. And you remember Anna Jarvis, she's the one that promoted Mother's Day, okay? And then Father's Day, the first observance was on July the 5th, 1908, in Fairmont, West Virginia. And again, it was in a Methodist Episcopal church. And it's now known as Central United Methodist. But Grace Golden Clayton was mourning the loss of her father, December 1907. And she wanted everybody to have a memorial, you know, for fathers. And, of course, it was very hard. It was not held outside of Fairmont. The city was overwhelmed. They had other things going on. And they never promoted it. Nobody was ever allowed to. One of the reasons was Independence Day, was July the 4th, 1908. And they had 12,000 people attend July the 4th. And so it just wasn't popular. And then in 1911, Jane Addams, she said, and she lived in Chicago, she said, let's promote Father's Day. They turned her down. Then in 1912, in Vancouver, Washington, they actually celebrated Father's Day. and it was a Methodist pastor, and his name was J.J. Behringer. And he was at the Methodist Church. And they thought they were the first to ever celebrate Father's Day, but they weren't.
Of course not.
And then Lions Club came along. Lions Club said, oh, we came up with the idea for Father's Day in 1915. And they said, we're going to have it the third Sunday in June. But they weren't.
Yeah,
it just kept going on like this.
So everybody wanted to take credit.
Yeah, but they were having it in just different little locales.
Yeah.
Then on June 19th, 1910, they held it at the YCMA in Spokane, Washington. And her father, this girl, Sonora Dodd, her father was the Civil War veteran, William Jackson Smart. And he was a single parent. When we've talked about him over the years, he raised six children by himself.
Oh, wow.
And that's why she wanted to celebrate Father's Day, because of what her father had done.
Wow.
Then in 1920, they stopped promoting it again. I mean, Father's Day was just coming and going. It could not get traction, let me tell you that. I mean, it was hard. And then they finally got men's clothing stores to get behind Father's Day, which is ridiculous, because they just couldn't get anybody to, you know, to really help them with it. And once they got the menswear association behind it, they said, you know, I think we can do it. So they became resilient. They incorporated these advertisements. So then by the 1980s, the Father's Day Council wrote, Father's Day has become a second Christmas for all of us.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So
then, in order to introduce the holiday, Congress in 1913-1916, Woodrow Wilson went to Spokane. And he wanted to speak at a Father's Day deal, but it just kept going on. And then they made two earlier attempts, and they were defeated by Congress. Congress did not want a Father's Day.
Really?
Yeah, can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine that.
And then in 1957, Senator Margaret Chase Smith wrote a Father's Day proposal, and she accused Congress of ignoring fathers for 40 years. So in 1966, Lyndon Johnson issued the first presidential proclamation, and he said, we're going to honor fathers the third Sunday in June. 6 years later, even after that, Vice President Richard Nixon signed it into law.
Oh,
it was
wow.
not signed until 1972.
My goodness, I did not know that.
I mean, everybody thinks we've always had Father's Day like Mother's Day, but we haven't.
Wow, I didn't realize
Congress
it was so late.
Was against it. Oh, yeah, everybody was against it. Now, little towns would celebrate, like Washington, Spokane, Washington, all these other little places, but never became a national holiday.
So it didn't even get any traction crazy? Until they started to, you know, make it a corporate type of event.
That's right. And then after that, Margaret Chase Smith got behind it and said, look, you know, Father's Day should be a national day, just like Mother's Day. We're, you know, this is important. And then, of course, Congress kept turning it down. And finally, Lyndon Johnson, then finally, I mean, this is hard to believe, 1972, Richard Nixon.
Wow.
Doesn't make sense, does it?
No. Wow. I don't know why, but I guess I just assumed or thought that Father's Day had been around since at least the 20s or 30s, I guess. I didn't realize
it was
1972.
I thought, you know, after World War II, surely, they had Father's Day because all the fathers involved in the war.
Yeah, they came home and celebrate them and all that.
Yeah, but not Father's Day.
Wow.
And if the Men's Association of New York hadn't got behind it and started selling ties and suits and shirts, I don't believe it would have ever come to fruition.
So it's their fault that ties are a thing for Father's Day then?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The dadgum ties that nobody wants. Oh, my gosh. Let me talk about that for a minute. Do not give your father a tie. He does not want a tie.
No.
He does not want socks. He does not want a mug. He has enough of them.
Yeah.
He wants a boat or fishing gear or golf equipment. Or send him to one of the big golf tournaments.
Oh,
man,
that'd be good.
He'd be appreciative.
Yeah.
Or take him to a Rangers game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got all these AAA teams and all this, which I'd forgot about, really. And, you know, here in Texas, we have several. We have the Rough Riders out in Frisco. Everybody goes out there to see. We've also got a team in Fort Worth. And Amarillo is fixing to have a team. I can't tell you the name of it, but they are preparing big for it. And then they're going to put in a big waterworks in Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Amarillo is going to come to Point. You know, always it was just 66, and it is the horse capital. You know, we have the horse museum there, the quarter horse museum, which is a big thing. But other than that, it's just Interstate 40 and old Interstate 66.
Mm.
But it looks like Amarillo is going to get recognition.
Wow, how cool.
It is cool. And so a baseball team, why, in the High Plains, that's unheard of.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the Rockhounds here just down the street.
Yeah, and I forgot about them.
Yeah.
They've been there, what, 10 years?
I don't know, probably.
A long time. And I think it's sold out lots of times in the summer.
Sometimes it does. I mean, I forget how many times they're champions, but golly, they're a very solid team.
Yes, and I'm always shocked that we have all these, you know, AAA teams right here in Texas.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about it, but I know they're well attended, all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know they, out here in Frisco on the Rough Riders, I know lots of times you can't get in the date you want even.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, no, your group can't come that day. They'll have to wait a couple of 3 weeks to even get in.
Yeah, sold out?
Uh-huh, they sell out.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a family deal. I would encourage everybody to take their kids to see the ball game.
Yeah.
I'd a lot rather be out at the ball game than hijacking cars.
It's either or. You know, you're either at the ball game or hijacking cars. That's really
That's
all
right.
there is.
Well, now I'm going to tell you a story, and this is true. A friend of mine was at a psychiatrist's office this week and said they brought in a little boy about 10 years old in the orange jumpsuit and in handcuffs.
Oh.
Now, is that scary? And a police officer with him.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's what's happening to the youth of America. A 10-year-old boy.
Wow.
And I don't know what he did, but let me tell you something. If you bring a 10-year-old in handcuffs, it's pretty serious.
Yeah. I don't know that I've seen that before.
I'd never even heard of it. And the police officer was right there with him.
Oh, my.
So, apparently, he was a rough customer at 10.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, in America, you know, we're having so many bad stuff with kids. You know, parents need to be with them, doing stuff with them.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember everybody went on picnics. They went fishing together. They went swimming together. They rode horses together. And they got out. They weren't watching videos all the time. And they say a lot of this is from videos. So I'm just encouraging them to do things with their fathers this weekend and have a great family time and make it count.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Life is short.
Right. Make some special memories.
That's right. Make some good family memories.
Excellent. Well, happy Father's Day.
If everybody could go back and think about all they did with their parents as kids, they had a great time.
Oh, yeah. Fond memories.
And, you know, when I was a kid, people out in the country like us, we didn't have swimming pools. They wouldn't even have thought of one.
Yeah.
But we had big stock tanks that had fresh water flowing through them.
Uh-huh.
And you went out there, you got an inner tube, and you swam in those big tanks.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cool deal. And all the neighbors' kids came, and you got in the creek, and you waded up and down the creek where the little fish were. I mean, there was things that didn't cost a dime that you could do.
Yeah, yeah.
And nowadays I hear about kids, they have to have something that costs money.
Yes.
They have to be spending money every day.
Yeah, we had to use our imaginations.
That's right. Everybody did. You know, they had bow and arrows, you know, they were handmade. Lots of fun things.
Yeah, neat.
So they need to honor their fathers this weekend and do something fun with them. Not the usual old junk, okay?
The usual old junk. Oh, there you
That's
go.
That's right. Well, I mean, take them to a place a father would want to go. It's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. Make a memory, not a thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And a new fishing rod wouldn't be bad. A new golf club wouldn't be bad. A new putter wouldn't be bad.
That's not bad at all.
No. I'm not going to go up to the cars and say, get them a Maserati.
Somebody might, though. You never know.
Somebody might. You never know.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Springs. I know you know where it is. If you don't, you need to know.
Now, one of the things we were talking about is post-retirement expenses. And one of the things that we covered was emergencies. Are there other types of post-retirement expenses that maybe people don't think about, like maybe taxes or, what other things might people need to put, maybe take from the back of their mind up into the front and really start planning for these things?
Well, I talk to them about all things. I talk to them, okay, what are you spending now, and what are you spending it on? How much is going toward taxes? How much goes for food every year? Entertainment. And people that don't put entertainment in are crazy. We need entertainment in life. So they have to have entertainment in their budget. It may be $1,000 a month. It might be $5,000 a month. And when they first retire, they're going to get the lake house. Remember that. Or another house somewhere. They're going to get a boat if they've always pined for a boat. That fella is going to get a boat, I can tell you that. Now, he may not keep it but 5 years, but he's going to have one, okay?
Yeah.
He may be a golfer. He may say, look, I need new golf clubs. I need a new putter. I need all this stuff when I retire. That's okay. But put it in the budget.
Yeah.
He may say, okay, I've drove this old pickup to work all these years, didn't need the new one. But darn it, I need a new pickup. All right, let's get that over with. Put that in the first budget if you need to, okay?
Yeah. Take care of the check off the things, the wish list and the bucket list and the things you've wanted to do and get, your whole life. Get those out of the way right off the bat.
That's right. It's time to do it. And before you do all that, plan it. Say, okay, the first year we're going to spend this, second year this, third year this. I've got one couple that retired last year, and they're having the time of their life. They've taken the grandkids to Disneyland. They've taken their kids to places they never dreamed of. They never knew they'd have the money to do all this.
Yeah.
So the first 2 or 3 years, you need to be on the move, because later you won't feel like it. Later you'll be too old to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll keep you young traveling. So I recommend that. Golf tournaments, that's another thing a lot of men like to do with their friends. I know a lot of men that gather their friends up on Tuesday or Friday, and they play together every week. And that's a good outlet for people. Don't go sit down. People who sit down do not live long.
They say to stay active.
You've got to. If you don't, you'll find out, you've got this wrong. Well, you've got that. And we don't want to hear about all that. We want to hear about your goals and that you're meeting your goals every day and that you're having a heck of a good time.
So we talk sometimes about how people, talk about maybe trying to cut back after retirement, but in reality, those first couple of years after they start retirement, they may be spending more than what they usually did.
That's right, but they have to allow for that. They have to say, okay, there's some things on our bucket list we need now. A lot of people don't think about it, but they're building new houses, mm-hmm. or they're buying new houses. They don't like the old house they've lived in for 30 years. I've got a lot of people, 70, getting new houses.
Wow.
And I've got people that are buying small ranches when they retire.
But you don't want to finance
these
things.
Keep them busy.
They're paying cash.
Absolutely. And they're not buying big places. They're buying small places that they can have fun on,
yeah.
and that they can pretend like they're farming. And in
reality,
they're not. They're just having a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But, there is crises that come up. There is things that come up. And the one thing we never do discuss is, do you have a will or a trust? Now, we had some clients 2 years ago that all of a sudden the man was desperately ill. They came, they brought the family, brothers, sisters, and said, Faye, we don't have a current will. And if something happens to me, this is going to be a terrible mess. So we wrote it all down. We contacted our lawyer. We had them come in and do new wills, get everything properly done. People put this off, and then they find out, oh, my gosh, I've got a week to live or a month to live, or I'm facing a drastic surgery, and they're not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the money, what you're going to do with the money is real important. If you're on a second or third wife, that's real important.
Oh, yes, because somebody will come out of...
you've got his children, her children, and you've got a mess on your hands.
Oh, yeah. People that you hadn't talked to or thought of or heard from in years will come out of the woodwork.
You will hear from them immediately.
Yeah.
They will tell everybody that will listen that they need part of that money, that it was promised to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my client that passed away, you know, she had it all set out to go to UT Southwest and to Duke University. People came out of the woodwork wanting that money.
I bet.
And with me telling them no. I said, it's not in the will, and you're not going to get it because it's not in her will. And she had changed part of her will. And people never believe that. I've got a client here in Midland that had a lady as trustee of her estate. And she's taken her off completely.
Oh, wow.
Taking her off completely. As she got older, she changed her mind. People do this. As they age, they decide to change everything around.
Yeah.
And this lady thinks she's going to be executor. She is not.
Well, thank goodness you're there to protect her.
Yeah, and she's got a nephew, and she's decided he will get everything.
Oh, wow.
Now, she may change her mind again. They do this, you know.
Uh-huh.
Age changes people.
It does. Your perspective on life and people and all that changes.
Yeah, and you decide, well, I don't like that person anymore. Or I don't want to do this, you know. And they say, no, I don't believe I'll give it to them.
Yeah.
And then that person will come to the trustee afterwards and say, I know I was going to get this. I think somebody's hiding something. They're not hiding anything. It just went away.
Yeah, they just changed their mind.
They just changed their mind. You're not in it.
Huh? Yeah, you have done something to get kicked out of the will. And I'm sure people are hearing all this and they're thinking, my goodness, you know, between the will and then you know the planning, the financial aspect of it, and you know the making sure we have enough money, and there's so many things we need to do, and there's so much money that we need. My goodness, I'm sure they're standing at the bottom, looking up, thinking, this is Mount Everest. I'm never going to get up there. So what do you say to that person who thinks, my goodness?
Well, it's not that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to head on, say, you know, let's get this done. I need this done. Our attorney is a very good estate planner. He does wills every day, and he will make them feel comfortable. I know the other couples that he's done their wills have praised him and said, you know, he was such a nice guy. He did it. He was a family-type person. He wasn't one of these high-pressure lawyers and didn't come out there and a Rolex watch and all that. You know, he was just down to earth, home type guy. And they, and he also came to them. Like when people out in Midland say, you know, I need this done, but I don't want to come into Dallas to do it. He'll come out to Midland. He does it all the time. We have a lot of estate planning that we do in Midland and Odessa.
Mm-hmm. But the key word here is the planning of it. And so if people really just get started, oftentimes it's a matter of once it's done, it's done. You can let it go on autopilot after that. It's not a maintenance thing that you need to, I mean, unless you want to change something. It's not something that it's going to consume people's times. They can go about their lives. But I'm sure people would be astonished at how much better they'll sleep at night knowing that everything is taken care of, from the will to their retirement, and that all these things are possible and everything can be done nice and neat and secure.
That's absolutely right, because lots of times you need a power of attorney in case you're sick.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people don't have a power of attorney. They need all types of documents, you know. And remember that a power of attorney is not any good after you pass away. A lot of times people say, oh, I have power of attorney. You don't have power of attorney. The person's dead. It's only good while they're alive. And you have to have something else after they pass away. You've either got to be the trustee of the estate, executor of the estate, in order to do anything for them. And lots of times elderly people will put their children on their bank account. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing to protect them. And, of course, you know, we had the incident where the mother was elderly. She was in her 80s. The daughters came to see me and said, you know, the other daughter has got control of everything of mother's. And said, you know, she lives with us. We take care of her. And her farm, they've got her to sign her farm over to them. Well, that wasn't right, you know, because in the will it said it would be share and share alike. And then she had taken about several hundred thousand and got her name on that. Well, I called our attorney. He came out here to Midland. He went to that bank, and he said, I want this straightened out right now. You know, there's two daughters, not one, and this woman is not going to take the mother's money. And the bank immediately set up straight and said, yes, sir. And then they contacted me and said, Faye, I think we'll just move her money to a different bank. And they did.
Wow, really?
And then they said, Faye, would you invest it? I said, I can't. She's just too old.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I can't do it. I said, you've got to leave it in cash in the bank. So that's what, but we resolved it real quick.
Yeah.
And got that woman off of there that was going to abscond with all the mother's money.
So you know? This case, it was a case of a bad daughter, really.
It was a bad daughter. She was going to take all the money from the mother, and you know, the other daughter would not have had any way to pay her bills.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was going to take it all, because she'd already got on the account and was wiping everybody out. So anyway, our attorney can handle those type of things.
Yeah.
So if you have any doubts about a relative, somebody you think is messing with something, use our attorney. He'll straighten it out.
Yeah, and you also hit on something real quick here that you wouldn't go ahead and do the investment for because she was just too elderly. This type of investment is not for everybody. Not you know, whether you're in your 60s or 70s or even if you're in your 40s, this may not be for everybody. So what type of a person would do a life settlement type of investment?
Well, mostly, you know, we do up to 70, 75 usually. If you're in your 80s, you have to have a daughter or a son on it with you. We're not going to do it for you without it.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything can go wrong. Speaking of that, one of the ones that came in with her daughter, oh, probably a year ago, that is invested with us, we made the daughter, you know, be co-owner on it. Her daughter can sign it anytime for anything. And she had a heart attack a couple of months ago. So right there, we needed that daughter immediately. So, you know, when people don't think about that, they're doing wrong by their family because you need a son or a daughter on that account if you're in your 80s because something could happen to you. You could have a car wreck.
Yeah.
You could have a heart attack like this lady did. And at her age, it was, you know, I kept wondering why she had a driver's license. But everybody said, no, they passed her. And I go, oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she'd bought a new Lexus a year ago.
Oh, nice.
I mean, would you think that you need a new Lexus in your 80s?
Well, you never know. You're in your 80s. Why not?
I guess so. I didn't think about that.
You weren't expecting that at all, were you?
No, I wasn't. I thought, no.
Well, the bottom line here is all of this can be done. You can retire. You can retire and do all the things you want to do. You should retire and do all the things you want to do. The point is, you've got to do the proper planning, from the will to the investments to make sure that the money is there. It's just a matter of getting started, taking baby steps, and you will get people to where they need to be. So for somebody who wants to come in, I assume you've got availability for appointments this coming week, right?
Sure.
Okay. So for somebody who wants to come in, get your materials together, find out what kind of money you've got, where, you know, where if you've got a 401k, get all that together, what types of assets do you have, get all that together, and then come in and see you. Even if they just want some information, just some general types of, you know, they may have some questions, get familiar with the process. So, Faye, one last time, what is your phone number for people to go ahead and make that appointment?
That's right. It's 877-588-3330. It's 877-588-3330. And, again, 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.